Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell was talking with, as am I, David McCullough, and we were talking about John Adams, particularly about John Adams and the time in which he lived. Maybe he just wanted it. Maybe he made time in the midst of this really hard life. Isn't there a sense of wanting things more, bringing a passion to these things that we've lost?
That's quite right. Also, they talk about the pursuit of happiness.
Rooted in virtue. What an unlikely
yes,
concept.
Yes, and what, it's very important to understand, or try to understand, what did they mean by that? They did not mean a backyard swimming pool. They might not have been opposed to a backyard swimming pool, but Adams believes that it is through learning that one finds something close to happiness. There's a wonderful letter where he is urging his son, John Quincy, who was then probably about 15, not to neglect the English poets, to read the English poets, along with Demosthenes and Cicero and so forth.
In Greek.
In the original, yeah.
In Greek.
Or Latin.
Yes, of course, exactly. And to carry a book with him wherever he goes.
That he should never be alone.
And he said, has anyone ever told you that you can read poetry for pleasure? In other words, that you can find pleasure in poetry. And then he contributes that wonderful line, you'll never be alone with a poet in your pocket.
Maybe we've lost that concept, too.
Well, I don't know. I think we probably have it in our backpack now, or the glove compartment.
Let us hope.
Most of the volumes of poetry that I see for sale are too big for my pocket. I keep trying to put them in my jacket pocket. I'm concerned that the bookseller is going to think I'm attempting to make off with something on the sly. But his delight in learning, his delight in Pope and Swift and Defoe and Johnson, all those wonderful 18th century writers that we
some of them
were
alive.
Required to read when we yeah. were took English courses,
and
we're probably too young to really understand how good they were.
Well, and part of it, contemporaries,
but part of it, I think, is a cultural issue. I mean, there was part of what he was doing. Adams and his peers were unusual men, but they also reflected their culture. They reflected their environment, and there was something about that culture, as juxtaposed again to what we're talking about now, I mean today, that somehow or other made that learning very, very, very important. And not only the learning, but the application of the learning.
And what it did to conversation, just mm-hmm. what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency, alas, to look for what to fall prey to what might be called the hubris of the present, to think that because we have all these wonderful electronic devices and the various labor-saving contrivances that make life so much easier and more comfortable, that we're therefore superior to those people who preceded us. And when you think that here's that little city, that big town of Philadelphia, population 30,000, where, among other things, they were making the most beautiful furniture ever made in America. Furniture we can't duplicate. Making it at a time when there were no power tools. Sandpaper hadn't even been invented. And not unlike a Stradivarius violin. We can't do it as well as they did. The literacy rate in Massachusetts was higher in John Adams' time than it is today. When people were educated in Greek and Latin. Now, it's not just that they knew how to speak or write the languages. They knew how to read and speak what the writing in the languages was about honor, about virtue, about the public good, about the social covenant. That was all, it was part of them. There's a line in one of Adams' letters to Abigail, in which he says, he's talking about the war, talking about what they're, this dangerous, perilous path that they're off on to launch a revolution.
And don't know if they'll ever come back.
Oh, the odds are all entirely against them. And he says, we can't guarantee success, but we can deserve it. Now, when I read that line, it practically, It was like a dash of cold water to wake me up. I thought, wow, look at that. We live in a day when all that matters is success, you know, being number one. How you got there, immaterial. Who cares how many people you gouged and betrayed or whatever to get to the top? He's saying we can't guarantee success, meaning that's in the hands of God, but we can deserve it. We can control whether we deserve it or not. We can't control whether we get it. Well, it turns out that that same line is in letters written by George Washington. And I began to think about that. I bet that isn't their line. And it isn't. It's a line from a play, the play Cato by Joseph Addison. So they're simply repeating something that's part of the culture. And what a message from the culture. Now, if I say to you, well, we'll just have to follow the yellow brick road. I don't have to explain what I mean. You know that. But to follow the yellow brick road, what does that mean? That doesn't mean very much.
It's not the same.
This is a whole ethic. These were people, or Adam certainly was, and others too were. These were people who did not put their moral compass in the closet and lock the door.
This can sound like there was the time when the gods walked the earth, and that was 200-something years ago, and that time has passed, and now it's simply not doable anymore. Reading your book about John Adams forced me, compelled me, to go back and read your book about Truman. And a lot changed in that 150-plus years between the two. But in some ways, they are almost the same person. The environment has changed, the culture has changed, but the commitment to learning, the core values, their backgrounds, their relationship with their wives, a striking number of things are similar. But what is most striking, particularly when you get past the Revolution to when Adams is having to function in this creation, the aggravation of democracy.
Does it look that way to you, too?
It's just, standard. It's almost indistinguishable.
Oh, and it's so relevant.
Mm. Well, they do have similarities, including the classic education. Mm-hmm. Truman's the only president of our time who never went to college. But he went to a high school where Latin was not only required, but taught very well, apparently. And he would read Latin for pleasure. And he was imbued with those same, his favorite books as a boy were Plutarch. And so we lost something.
He did all of his life. He read all of it.
And
we didn't do it just to get through college.
When the classical education was disbanded. It wasn't irrelevant. Those aren't dead languages any more than the past is dead. Now, there are very important differences between John Adams and Harry Truman. The most important and obvious is the one you cited right away, which they lived in entirely different ages, entirely different times, different cultures. You can never assume, oh, those people back then, they were just like us, just like we are. They weren't, because they lived in a different culture. And they were blind to certain things, just as we are. We don't know what those things are yet, but future generations will probably see.
We haven't achieved,
not the least of which is slavery.
We haven't achieved perfection
yet. Yes, well, of course, the Adams were not blind to slavery.
And all the way through these stories, always you keep coming back to the role of slavery.
You have to.
Before and after. It's remarkable how it's always there.
It's the great San Andreas fault in the whole idealistic credo that we were holding up as the emblem that we marched on. Well, the other great difference between Adams and Truman, which I must include, is that John Adams was brilliant. Harry Truman had a good mind. He had the courage to use common sense. So did John Adams. But John Adams was truly brilliant. Of course, the question is, how does that happen? We've done homage to Abraham Lincoln for all these years, as we should. Man coming out of nowhere. How did it happen? Miracle. Well, it's somewhat true of John Adams, too. Why John Adams? I think that the issue of slavery has to be understood as something that was there at the very beginning. It isn't something that kind of cropped up before the Civil War. And it's important to understand that John and Abigail Adams never owned a slave. On principle, John Adams is the only founding father, the only one who never owned a slave, as a matter of principle. Now, it's correct to say, in understanding slavery and slave masters and people who lived in that culture, that we have to understand that they were people of their time. That's true, absolutely true. Judge them in the context of their time. But the Adams lived in that time too, and let's not forget them. Abigail is, you know, pestilence sweeping through the little town, people dying on all sides, the war at her doorstep, writes to John in Philadelphia, "I wonder if our suffering is not God's vengeance for the evil of slavery." That's pretty powerful.
And it takes us right to a place I want to be when we come back in just a moment. Let me interrupt, please. We'll go away for a moment, come right back with David McCullough talking about John Adams and a great deal more about America, about democracy, and the world at large when we return with the Paula Gordon Show. Please do stay tuned.